Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Brass Tax Sunday for April 5th. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's program, in which we continue to focus on the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic here. We are standing by to join the press conference and COVID-19 update hosted by the Minister of Health and Wellness, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick. And we will break the program as soon as that event is ready to start. In the meantime, we'll turn our attention to the National Insurance Scheme and the role that they're designated to play during the crisis. You will recall that the National Insurance has been identified as one of the agencies that are supposed to play a pivotal role in this. All those who have been laid off, the Prime Minister, Mia Momotley, announced that the scheme will be topping up those short weeks, 60% of earnings for the days persons are not working. We heard last week in the Sunday Sun from the National Insurance Board Chairman, Mr. Ian Gooden-Edgell, that they are projecting to pay out nearly $4 million weekly to Barbadian workers in unemployment benefits. And he also reported for that first week of the curfew, when the layoffs really started, they had about 900 claims that week. We are trying now to link up with Mr. Ian Gooden-Edgell, as well as the NIS Director, Jennifer Hunt, Assistant Director for Customer Service, Derek Lowe, and the Marketing and Research Officer, Katrina Ben. So we will have them on the program. And as I said, as soon as the press conference comes through, we'll just break and then we will continue. Our operator today is Mr. Ronnie Clark, and his will be the first voice you hear when you call us at 43-41790. In the interim, just like to remind you that this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
For business supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals, we have it all.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate, too, on all your fencing materials.
For building supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals, we have it all. At Williams Metals, we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tax Sunday. This is Sanka Price with you, along with Ronnie Clark. As I said, we are waiting to join the press conference with Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick, the Minister of Health and Wellness, as soon as that is ready, and they'll be giving you an update on COVID-19. In the interim, we'll be discussing the National Insurance Scheme and the role that they'll play. We have on the line, we don't have anyone on the line as yet, but we welcome your calls now. Some of the things that I'm sure that you'll be wondering about would be how soon, if you have been laid off for this curfew period, how soon you will be able to get some sort of payment. Now, the thing about it is that you would have been able to put your form in online and whatnot, so that the NIS officials, they obviously would have to discuss that as well. One of the burning questions that as soon as this was announced that we were doing the NIS, some people wanted to know if their money, some employees wanted to know if their money was being deducted and the money was not being paid in by the employer, what they can do. So these are some of the issues that we hope to bring to light with the NIS officials when they join us here on the line. Also, one of the things that we want to look at as well is how you qualify for unemployment benefits and severance. These are some of the issues I think that we would have to look at. And don't forget, I didn't mention to you, 266-4862. That is, of course, our WhatsApp. And you can send us all your questions there as well, because we want to get as much from these officials as possible. And I need to also to tell you that what we're going to do is we're going to try after 12:30 to bring in the COVID czar, Mr. Richard Carter. We'll also try to get Dr. Anton Bess and a couple of other officials who will speak then generally about some of the points that would have been raised, especially at the press conference, and some of your concerns as well related to the curfew. Because coming down here, I saw quite a bit of people on the road. So we are now on the phone trying to get these people as well. Now, one of the other things I need to bring to your... We take a call. You're on the line. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Sanka.
Yes, good morning, sir.
Yeah, right ahead. I want to know, this content is going to be short. And I noticed this with all insurances, especially national insurance. And I want people to realize, too, that the word national belong to the people. Where is it that your money is paid in? But when it comes time for you to benefit from it, you get goodies to get it. Another thing I want to talk about briefly is this authority nonsense. Now, I hear people say it can't be solved. I hear people from both parties say it can be solved. It's a document that is moved from one place to another to another. Let's say this document is going to three places, and you find that station two, there's always a problem which prevents station three from getting it on time or sometimes not at all. Why not deal with station two? Why is so hard about that? People working for months and not being paid. And I sometimes wonder if it is purposely done. Why aren't investigations being... I can't say so.
All right. Sorry to cross you, but you lost me there, station one, station two. Precisely exactly. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the authority. Where people get paid by an authority. It's a document that goes from one ministry to another.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So if, let's say, for example, I have to go to three different ministries, and you find there's a problem all the time that prevents station three from getting it because station one has sent it to station two, but for some reason, continuously, it is not being done. Mm-hmm. What is so hard about solving that? I know of a person who worked for over a year and then get paid because of this authority.
All right. You know that this, what you are asking about is something that has been plaguing temporary workers, especially like people. It usually comes out with the nurses and whatnot. It's a problem that has been going on for decades. And like you, I keep wondering, but why? Why is this happening? We know what the problem is. So why has it not been solved? Anyhow, I really don't want to get into much detail about that because what we have a shorter program on Sunday.
Yeah, so I know, I'll focus it.
Yeah, but any questions on the NAS that you want to talk about apart from the first one? Why is it that your money is paid in, but to get your money is difficult?
It happens to all insurances.
Okay.
Even all one insurance. I would like you to ask that question on my, not on my behalf, but on behalf of all people.
Okay. You take good care. Thank you. Right. We got another call. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. You're on the air. Yes, good morning. You need to turn your radio down in the background.
Okay.
Yes. Not on my behalf. Yes, go right ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Right.
Before you start, I just want to remind everyone listening that we are really just waiting for the press conference to start, to go live with the press conference. And then we will deal with the NAS. But if you give me some of your questions now, what we'll do is write them down. And as soon as the officials from the NAS come on, we will proceed with that. Okay? So go right ahead.
Right. No, pensions, the ones that go to the bank accounts, they were on very early, right? Around last week, Wednesday. But then those that receive their checks in the mail, they never probably came out till about Thursday or Friday. There's an old gentleman, you know, he lives alone, very concerned. And
yes, can you hold that? Because we're about to join the press conference now. And so we just hold our questions and we go to the press conference live.
Fellow Barbadians, residents, I greet you on this day that is observed as Palm Sunday by those of us of the Christian faith. and marks the beginning of the holiest week in the Christian calendar. It is a time for many of us in the faith community that is marked by a period of deep reflection on the ultimate sacrifice and on the emergence of hope and renewal from darkness and despair. It is against the solemnity of this period and with much sadness that I inform the nation that we recorded our first death from COVID-19 last night. The deceased is an 81-year-old Barbadian man who traveled to the United Kingdom and returned to Barbados on March 22nd. He, along with his wife, 83, was tested for COVID-19 yesterday, Saturday, after reporting symptoms. They both tested positive for the viral illness. The condition of the deceased man, who had underlying medical conditions, deteriorated rapidly after being admitted into care. I was informed of his death late last night from COVID-19 related pneumonia and complications of diabetes. I take this opportunity to extend deepest condolences from the government and people of Barbados to the family and friends of the deceased, and ask you to take solace in knowing that the God we serve continues to keep you and all of us in his care. I am very grateful for the medical professionals who, at great personal risk to themselves, continue to care for and treat those infected with COVID-19 and who provided this gentleman with the best available medical care. These brave Barbadians, the other public health staff directly involved in the COVID-19 response, and the entire cohort of staff working in the public and private sector to maintain the high quality health care that Barbados has become known for, deserve our support, our prayers, and our deepest respect. In this regard, I am pleased to announce to Barbados that a 100-person team of intensive care specialists from the Republic of Cuba will arrive in Barbados today in order to provide respite and support for our medical teams who have been on the front line of treating those with COVID-19, working grueling hours in the most demanding of circumstances. We thank the government and people of the Republic of Cuba for their support to Barbados in this time of great demand for their medical services worldwide. I am further pleased to announce that a significant number of medical practitioners and other medical professionals have stepped forward to offer their services to the government and people of Barbados and will form a volunteer corps in support of the country's effort to continue to provide the best medical care not only for those infected by COVID-19, but for the range of medical services that will continue to be delivered for our people. On behalf of the government and people of Barbados, I thank them sincerely for coming forward in this time of national public health emergency. I am also happy to announce that I have been advised that the new medical facility at Harrison's Point, which has been converted from an abandoned ruin to a first-class hospital with 220 beds for the treatment of COVID-19 patients, will be handed over by the contractors to the Ministry of Health and Wellness tomorrow. We will immediately begin the process of outfitting the facility with the required medical equipment so that it can be pressed into service in the shortest possible time. This will now provide us with an additional 38 beds with ventilation capacity and 182 isolation beds for critical care and treatment of COVID-19 patients. Finally, I'm very pleased to announce to the nation that in the midst of all of the distress, dislocation, and the sad news of persons being infected and our first death from COVID-19, We will see the emergence from isolation today of 6 persons who have recovered from COVID-19. This is a tribute to the quality of care and treatment provided by our medical teams. And we celebrate this important milestone with these patients and their families, with whom they can now be reunited. Fellow Barbadians, I spoke earlier of the arrival of the Cuban specialists and also of the handing over of the St. Lucie facility. We shall commence today the process of outfitting that facility. Among the list of supplies ordered and many already received are indeed ventilators. From the outset of the prevalence of this virus in Wuhan, China, the Prime Minister of this country and Minister of Finance, the Honorable Mayor Motley, issued an open check to the Ministry of Health and Wellness for the procurement of ventilators. We have an adequate amount of ventilators on island at this point, and ventilators have been arriving almost daily over the past 2 weeks or so. To date, we have had need to use only 3 ventilators. We have at present on island at least 37 ventilators owned by and in the control of the government, and 11 others owned by private sector interests, but which have magnanimously been placed at the full disposal of the government. So it is absurd for anyone to say, suggest, imply, or insinuate that there is a shortage or could in the foreseeable future be an acute shortage of ventilators on the island. Indeed, we have on order through 5 different sources more than 150 ventilators ordered, paid for, and in the process of or are awaiting shipment. But I remind you that ventilators are the most in-demand item in the world today, and Barbados is merely wrestling with the other 203 countries and territories around the globe, also seeking to secure as much of this piece of equipment as possible. Overall, we are saddened by the loss of the first Barbadian on island, a daughter of this soil. You would be aware that we have already lost brothers and sisters living elsewhere in the diaspora. Barbadians and residents, this virus will not go away if we surrender or if we retreat. Now is not the time for surrender or retreat. We have to unite as a people to fight this virus. And I'm calling and urging all Barbadians, including those with specialist skills that are required in this fight, to come forward. Come forward to assist your country in an hour of greatest need. I would like at this point to invite the chief medical officer to give an update for you on COVID-19 for today.
Thank you, Minister. Good morning to all persons in Barbados. As of April 4th, 2020, we've conducted 527 laboratory tests for COVID-19. To date, we have diagnosed 56 cases of COVID-19. That's an increase of 4 new cases over the last 24 hours. Of the 56 cases, 28 are males and 28 are women, ranging in ages from 7 to 83. The vast majority of these cases are imported cases into Barbados. We've identified a significant portion of those cases through contact tracing, and 3 persons are still being investigated in terms of the source of infection. And the majority of these cases are in mild to moderate condition. Dr. Ford, who is also with us, can give any updates that are required. We continue our aggressive surveillance, which includes testing for COVID-19 of suspected cases. And we also continue our efforts to contact, trace, and to contain and isolate new cases once identified. I also take this opportunity to remind persons of the critical importance of prevention, including the physical distancing messages that we've been putting out there, the use of the hand hygiene, including the use of hand sanitizer and washing hands with soap and water, and good respiratory hygiene. I also remind persons who are ill and need medical attention, if they're ill from respiratory illnesses, to call ahead. Do not turn up at your healthcare provider. You can call ahead to ask for advice as to what to do. And you also can call the hotline that has been established. And that number is 536-4500. Thank you. At this point, I would like to invite Dr. Ford to give an update.
Good morning to all the Barbadian public. A quick update on the patients at the various units. At our Paragon campus, the patients all at Paragon campus have remained stable to this point, and of which there are 19 patients at that facility. It is at this facility that we will have 4 patients being discharged today, 3 males and 1 female. At our campus 2, at our Enmore facility, this is a facility which houses our more sick patients. At that facility, we have 4 patients, 3 females and 1 male. And of those patients, 3 of them are ventilated. 1 on the ventilator is doing quite well. The other 2 patients remain in a critical condition. Thankfully for us, one of the patients who tends to be doing quite well has also tested negative in terms of swabs at this point. At our third campus, where we have 28 patients, we will have 2 patients being discharged from that unit, and 3 patients at that unit still remain quite ill. We expect those 2 patients to be discharged from that facility at this point. So that's really the clinical update.
Thank you, Dr. Ford. I would now like to invite the SAR, COVID SAR, to be able to say to all of us what this means for the broad response going forward.
Thank you, Minister, and good morning, Barbadians. Just a couple of reflections on what you have heard today. So we've had our first death, and that is a reminder of the potentially deadly nature of COVID-19. And particularly the risk of age and underlying health conditions, which we would have seen in the unfortunate death of the first case. The second important point is the first release of patients who have now emerged as cured of COVID-19. And this is a reminder that this is not a death sentence, and that with care and appropriate treatment, patients can survive. I want to draw attention to the fact that even though we've been using imported to make a distinction between persons who have acquired the disease overseas or who had traveled and returned to Barbados sick, and a distinction between that and persons who have been infected locally, the majority of those persons who are imported cases are in fact Barbadians. They are Barbadian citizens, and by such designation, they are entitled to travel and return to their country of origin. And we therefore want to draw this to the public's attention because we would not want the impression to be created that cases are being imported in Barbados, particularly in respect of where we have heard a number of calls for the closure of our borders. The announcements that have been made in relation to facilities and equipment, this gives further strengthening to the commitment that has been made to ensure that Barbados is as ready as it possibly can be in relation to making facilities and equipment available for the treatment of persons with COVID-19. And you would also have heard of the emergence of a number of volunteer medical officials who will take some of the strain and pressure off our frontline healthcare workers by providing some of that back office or back of the medical support that we are delivering. It is important now that we do everything not to put additional pressure on our healthcare system, staying off the road and staying at home, following the public health advice which has been given at every opportunity that we have spoken. Even this morning on my way here, I still saw too many people on the road. I saw facilities that have been prohibited from doing so, conducting business, and persons making purchases. We still continue to see the level of irresponsible behavior, albeit from a minority of Barbadians, we are still continuing to see that behavior. This is a reminder that the virus thrives in exceptions. So persons who fail to follow the advice, even though they may be a small minority, that minority is putting the rest of us at risk. Perhaps Minister may want to entertain questions at this point.
I now invite the members of the media to pose any questions that they have, and I will delegate the appropriate officer to answer.
Good morning, Minister. This is Ian Bourne from both BajanReporter.com and CETA 90.1 FM. I was wondering, while I'm very encouraged to learn that there are six recoveries, does the single death with the 81-year-old, does this mean an extension of the curfew slash lockdown?
The curfew slash lockdown had no relation to the number of patients or any persons dying, and that was designed for a specific purpose, to be able to allow public health officials to be able to do the necessary work that was required for us to contain the spread of the virus.
And I'm also wondering if, in regards to the six people that recovered, if samples of their antibodies would be used by Carlisle Laboratories to see if Barbados can make progress towards creating their own vaccine.
Thank you. I'll invite Dr. Corey Ford to respond to you.
Thank you for your question. With regards to the six persons, so I think this is important to understand how we actually come to a point where we can discharge these patients. As per international standards, which we follow, and as per international testing, the patients require two negative screens for COVID, which were 24 hours apart, which will allow us to make that decision for discharge. So we have done that. With regards to the second part of your question, it's a quite interesting question. However, at this point, they're still quite early post clearing the virus from the system. So these are things that we probably will have to think about in the future. In terms of vaccines, I know there are lots of vaccine trials going on overseas, and we will wait for the information with regards to that.
All right, Dr. Ford, one more thing. I wanted to know where the 28 patients that you mentioned that had the majority of recoveries had come from. You had listed Enmore and you had listed Paragon, but I was trying to ascertain the third location.
Okay, so let's correct you on the locations. So location one from Paragon, there are four people, and our campus three, which is at Blackman and Gallup, the two patients are coming from that particular area. I would take pains to say that for the majority of patients, they actually at this point remain stable. There's actually a large percentage of the patients who are actually doing quite well, who are walking around like yourself or myself, but we're really awaiting them to clear the virus. And we don't get to decide when that happens, but we're continually testing them for that event. And I think we will have some more pretty soon.
Dr. Ford, carrying it in from Loop News, just a follow-up. You didn't say the sexes of the two persons from Blackman and Gallup. You didn't give information on the two.
Okay. Oh, so the information there is one male and one female.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Antoinette Connell from the Nation newspaper.
Jesus.
I want to find out, the czar spoke about some of the people still doing things that were prohibited. What is being done about rural groups that gather? And in one case, we had one group coming back to apologize. What is being done to ensure that people are not gathering when they shouldn't be?
I'll invite Mr. Carter to answer that, please.
In terms of what is being done, the Attorney General has given instructions, and the Minister responsible for security has given instructions to both the Royal Barbados Police Force as well as the Barbados Defence Force, which has been pressed into service in support of the actions of the Royal Barbados Police Force, to ensure that the law, which is prohibiting gatherings of more than three persons, that the law is obeyed and that that directive is carried out. We have also appealed to the good sense of Barbadians to protect themselves and to protect their families. In every instance, you will see persons who are prepared to defy laws and regulations. And I am assured that the Royal Barbados Police Force is taking action against those individuals when identified, and taking action in relation to the observation of the period of curfew. I myself was stopped and challenged by an officer of the Royal Barbados Police Force and required to produce my ID to indicate my bona fides for being on the road. And I had a pass in order to be on the road. So the answer to your question is, this is an ongoing effort by the Royal Barbados Police Force and the security officials of Barbados, but we do require the compliance and observance of the requirements of keeping off the road from ordinary Barbadians.
Wendy Burke, Starcom Network News. This question is either for Dr. Ford or Dr. Best. In terms of the three who we're seeing are still on the ventilators, do they also have similar comorbidities to the person who is now deceased?
I'll invite Dr. Ford to answer that question.
Thank you for that question. The answer is actually yes. All three persons who are on the ventilator have diabetes or and hypertension. So those are the comorbidities of those. All three of them do have diabetes, all of those on the ventilator at this point.
And just to be clear, was the age range given 17 or 7?
The age range.
Because it wasn't too clear.
The age range is 7.
As in 7 years old?
7 years old.
Okay, thank you.
This is in terms of the patients, the total amount of patients.
Yes.
There's someone who's 7 years of
yes.
age, but that person is well.
Okay, he or she would be mild.
Yeah, very mild, yes.
Okay.
Good morning, Sharika Griffith from the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation. Back to the deceased, the 81-year-old Barbadian man, would he and his wife have been in home quarantine?
He and his wife certainly presented, when they presented to the hospital, they were in a quarantine at home.
Okay, and could you give us an idea of, well, we know that he's deceased, so what condition is his wife in?
His wife is generally stable. We admitted her actually last night to the Enmore facility, more as a precaution given the circumstances. And I would take pains to say this morning, is that many of our healthcare workers are working, you know, overtime. They're doing things that they would ordinarily do within the healthcare facility, and we make these decisions. We made a decision to admit her to the Enmore facility last night, the intensive care team and ourselves, really because of the trying situation which she found herself in as a Barbadian. I think we really have to really look at this particular pandemic in country on a global basis, and I think we also need to appreciate the sort of work that many of the healthcare professionals out there are putting in, from our orderlies to our nurses to the doctors who work sometimes overtime doing things that they would not normally do. There's a lot of effort being put in from our end. Thankfully, she's doing well. We expect her to be discharged from Enmore facility today to our step-down facility.
Great. As it relates to the Cubans who the minister indicated will be arriving today, will they be required to do the 14-day mandatory quarantine?
The 100 Cuban nurses that are arriving today will be tested by us. They've been tested in Cuba, but we will also do our own tests, and Those nurses, fortunately, are not required for immediate service because the Harrison Point facility in particular is still in the process of being outfitted with the necessary equipment. So we have adequate time to be able to deal with that particular situation.
Minister, I was just wondering, Guyana has donated 1.4 million in ventilators. Have those arrived in the island yet?
Nope, they have not yet arrived on island as far as I am aware, but they were seized in the United States. Paid for, but seized. So we are trying to see exactly how that is going to, what is going to transpire there.
Good morning. This question is for Dr. Ford. I know the 24-hour curfew was intended to suppress the spread of the disease, but leading up to the actual shutdown, there was an outpouring of Barbadians on the streets. And I was just wondering, are authorities preparing for the possibility that we may have seen a major spike in cases given the number of people who are not practicing social distancing, and how are you guys preparing to respond to that?
Thank you for the question, but that is a question that can more appropriately be answered by the public health official here. That is the Chief Medical Officer Acting, Dr. Anton Best. Please respond.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Minister. Thank you for the question. We were very concerned by what we saw last week with the numbers of persons outside of supermarkets. Because you're absolutely correct. Even though there was order within the supermarkets and there was social distancing or physical distancing, that was not the same on the outside as people clamored to get into these facilities. We don't necessarily expect a spike in the numbers of new cases, simply because at this point, we don't have any evidence of community transmission of COVID-19.
Okay, a follow-up to that question, Dr. Best, just in terms of the 14-day incubation period, will we then be moving to April 17th and April 18th because it was April 3rd?
No, the shutdown period was not determined by an incubation period. The shutdown period was determined by other factors.
Good. Yes, if I can go back to the quarantine question in relation to the elderly man. Was he quarantined upon his arrival or was he at home self-quarantining?
I'll invite Dr. Corey Ford to respond to the question.
Right, so just a direct answer to that, the answer is no. The patient was not at home quarantine, or did we have him in quarantine at that point?
Dr. Ford, before you go, can you tell us for the ones who are still on self-quarantine at home, can you give them some indication as to the regularity of the visits by the health officials, et cetera, especially those who do have comorbidities?
Thank you. That's a question for the Chief Medical Officer because that's a public health
area. Okay.
Thank you.
So we have mandatory quarantine being imposed on persons who would have traveled from abroad. And then we also have persons who are identified through contact tracing who are in home quarantine. And all of the persons who are in quarantine, whether it's in a facility or whether at home, are monitored on a daily basis. And that monitoring includes asking about the development of symptoms for COVID. So have you developed a fever? Have you developed a cough? Do you have any shortness of breath? It also involves daily temperature checks twice a day. So once in the morning and once in the evening.
I would also like to add there that the fact that the persons you are referring to would not have being required for mandatory quarantine because the mandatory quarantine order for United Kingdom, Europe, and the United States would have been issued after their return to Barbados.
Could we get some details on the 7-year-old, his condition, please?
Dr. Ford has already indicated that the seven-year-old, the condition, mild condition, and doing very well, and no cause for concern at this point in time.
Minister, you mentioned calling out people. Are you looking for medical personnel to come out from retirement to assist, like what is the case in England?
We're looking for more than medical personnel. There's a role for each and every Barbadian in this fight. This is a national fight, a national effort. We need people to be able to help to distribute food, to do various things. And whoever is willing, we will find a role for you, because we are all in this together. This is a national effort and requires a national effort.
Hi, I have two questions for the Czar. On your way down, you said you would have seen some businesses open. I need a clarification or a distinction. What is a village shop and what is a mini mart? Because this is confusing persons. They're saying that their village shop is closed, but they don't understand. So I need that clarified. And I also need to find out, with regards to police officers, people are concerned about the distance between police officers and the curfew breachers. The fact that the police officers aren't having PPE or even wearing masks in some cases, or wearing the wrong mask in some cases. So can you please speak to these 2 points?
Okay, first of all, the distinction between village shop and minimart, I believe the order that was given prohibited supermarkets from opening, but allowed all of the other agencies that sell groceries to remain open. I did not indicate what business I saw that was open, because I'm going to give that information to the authorities. But suffice it to say, it was neither a village shop nor a mini mart. It was a business that would have been prohibited under the order that was given. In terms of the officers wearing PPE, again, the Attorney General has addressed this in relation to ensuring that police officers who are carrying out their duties that require them to be either in contact with persons where there's reasonable concern that those persons may be infected or potentially infected, that those officers are provided with the necessary personal protective equipment, because it would make absolutely no sense to have persons who are on the front line and potentially at risk not to give those persons the adequate and appropriate level of protection.
I'm addressing a question, I believe, to the Czar. There was an item on GIS, the Government Information Service, about elderly persons receiving care and being checked on. Is a special pass going to be provided by the relevant authorities to allow people to tend to the senior citizens of the country?
The short answer to that question is yes, but it is a provisional yes, because obviously the Government of Barbados, in its efforts to restrict movement of the population across the country, wants to exercise that restriction, but not to the point where we prevent the legitimate care and support for elderly persons who are unable themselves to move around. There is therefore a system where persons who, either as nurses or care professionals, are responsible for providing care to elderly persons, or members of the immediate family who perhaps care for persons who are not living with them in the same household, for those persons to apply for and to be granted a pass once they satisfy the officials that their questions and their requirement is legitimate.
Wendy Burke, Starcom Network here again. I just want to get something in as to where we are classifying COVID-19 now. Are we treating it as a high consequent infectious disease? Or are we going along with what the international community would have published as of March in the UK and the US as just a common cold? Where are we at in terms of how we're classifying this illness now?
Yes, Dr. Best, please to answer.
Sure. So I do believe that the Czar, in his opening remarks, would have mentioned that this is a serious and potentially deadly contagious disease. This is not the common cold by no stretch of the imagination in terms of the severity, the potential severity of illness, and in terms of the potential burden on healthcare systems. So it's a highly contagious disease affecting approximate, for every one person who's infected, approximately an additional three persons can become infected. And that would explain the rapid spread in many different countries where you have an exponential rise in cases. And that is
I'm
what
glad
we're trying
to that, Dr. Bess. Can you give me some indication on the mapping that you've been doing with the help of the UWI Epidemiology Department?
That data would be released in another setting.
Okay.
Dr. Bess, you mentioned that you're still investigating where three of the confirmed cases may have picked up the disease. Does this suggest an escalation? Because up until now, you've been able to identify other cases using contact tracing.
Yeah, no. So the three cases that I mentioned are three people who were diagnosed very recently. So we usually need a couple of days to make a link to determine where persons got the infection from. So there's no escalation. So that number is low, but every single day we would have persons that we're still investigating. We need at least 48 to 72 hours to make a determination as to the source of infection.
Okay.
In relation to the ventilators, what is the position with the ones that Rihanna would have paid for Barbados to have?
Earlier with the exportation of the ventilators because of a decision taken by the government of the United States of America. But fortunately for us, as I said earlier, we are using about four or five different sources, and we are hopeful that we'll be able to get what we want in this country.
What is the ministry's official position on wearing masks or facial covering?
I'll invite the chief medical officer to respond to you.
So up until recently, the ministry was not in favor of the general public wearing masks. However, I believe you're asking the question because recently the CDC would have come out and in support, or rather have taken a position of no objection to persons in the public wearing masks. We in the ministry, therefore, are of the view that persons in the general public can wear masks. However, we want to stress that there are other effective measures to reduce the likelihood of acquiring COVID-19. And I would have mentioned those earlier, such as the physical distancing, the hand washing, not touching your face, and respiratory hygiene for those who are ill, and of course, avoiding ill persons. So to put it this way, we are not objecting to the general public wearing masks. However, we do not want the general public buying the medical mask, and that's the N95 mask and the surgical mask. Those can only be used or should only be used in healthcare settings. So we do allow for persons to use the cloth mask.
Okay, question with regards to the supermarkets and the possible reopening of them, because I haven't heard anything about the delivery services. So if we are going to move to reopening these supermarkets, are we going to use the surname system? Or are we going to go by community? Zar, do you have any thoughts on this?
Thank you for the question. We have had an ongoing set of discussions with the major retailers and distributors in Barbados in relation to they both putting in place a system for delivery and potentially curbside pickup for the supermarkets once they are reopened. In terms of the mechanism that we will use, whether it is name or the use of person's national identification number, those discussions are still ongoing as to what is the most appropriate mechanism to restrict the numbers. Obviously, some form of managed system will be put in place, and that managed system will be the subject of ongoing discussion between the government and the retail and distributing sector of Barbados.
Thank you very much.
When, Wendy Burt here again. A number of questions. Try to be as fast as I can. First of all, can we define what respiratory hygiene really is? Secondly, what should individuals be able to do and not to do? People want to know if they can still do their regular exercising outside, et cetera, et cetera. And then also, is it still safe to say that Barbados has no community transmissions?
Chief Medical Officer will respond.
Thank you, Minister, and thank you for the question, Ms. Burke. Respiratory hygiene refers to persons who have cough, cold symptoms, sneezing, etc. We do not want persons to cough or to sneeze into their hands. You have to do that into a tissue or into your elbow. And then, of course, you want to avoid coming into contact with other persons who are not ill because you want to limit the spread of infection that you may have. And of course, the infection that we're concerned about is COVID. And those are some of the signs and symptoms of COVID. Respiratory hygiene could also entail the use of a surgical mask or another type of mask to limit the spread of the droplets when a person coughs or sneezes. And it would also entail the use of hand hygiene. And once again, that is frequent washing of your hands with soap and water or the use of alcohol-based hand sanitizer. To answer the third part of your question about community spread, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have any evidence of community spread. But our position in the ministry is that we have to continue to look for it as though it is there. That is the only way you're going to get on top of this disease. So we want people, of course, who have possible symptoms of COVID to come forward. We test persons and we want to test more people to, in order to detect cases. We can detect a case, we can contain it and prevent the onward spread by putting that person in isolation and using contact tracing to identify the possible close contacts of those cases.
Okay, I know I said I'd try to be brief. In terms of the respiratory therapists, do we have enough of them on island? And also for the minister, some individuals are here wanting to volunteer, so they want to know if you can repeat those numbers that they can volunteer to.
Dr. Bess, I invite the Chief Medical Officer to respond, please.
Sure, sorry. You also asked a question about exercise, so I was going to hand over to the Czar, but what I can say is exercise is important, but under the current circumstances, you have to do it on your premises. You have to stay home and exercise. So you're not permitted to leave your home as you customarily would, and we're encouraging people to be careful and to obey the law, to abide by the law, and to exercise to be as healthy as possible on their premises in their home. Sorry,
and I guess they should keep their animals there too.
Yes.
Sorry, yeah, onto the ventilators now and the therapists.
So we've identified the need for additional healthcare personnel, and that is why the Cubans are coming in. The healthcare personnel are coming in from Cuba today. I do not recall how many of them are going to be the respiratory therapists, but we have identified that, and we're also making plans to identify other healthcare personnel from other places. And of course, the media will be kept apprised of that information when the time is right.
Okay, can you repeat the number now? Because some people are here inundating my WhatsApp wanting the numbers so they can respond because they actually have backgrounds.
So it's a COVID hotline, the COVID-19 hotline, and that number is 536-4500.
Okay, I thank you, gentlemen, very much for your time.
Thank you, too.
Okay, so
and
I just want to ask questions to Dr. Bass, following on from what Wendy would have asked just now. So persons were already concerned about the hotline being overloaded. Is there another number that volunteers can use? That is one. And can Dr. Ford, can he clarify when he said presented to the QEH for the persons who were sick, the 81 and 83-year-old?
Let me respond to the question about the hotline. We have multiple people on various shifts. At some points, the call volume is high, so we ask people to bear with us if you happen to call at a time when the hotline is inundated. But the hotline is open 24 hours, and it is
manned around the clock. Dr. Ford?
Yeah, thank you very much. I just want to correct something that I would have said earlier in relation to the ventilators that were presented by Rihanna. In fact, five of those ventilators are due in next week. The order that I was referring to actually was not the Rihanna order, but another order for 20 ventilators that a philanthropist had consented to purchase for us. Those ventilators were actually stopped in the United States, the exportation of those 20 ventilators. The other thing I want to make clear is that the deceased is a male. And I also want to just say, because I know people may be concerned, and I have to stress this point all the time, with the increase in the number of confirmed cases. And we need to get used to this, because this is going to continue. And the issue for me as a Minister of Health and Wellness is not the number of confirmed cases, it's about the capacity to be able to treat the cases. And I'm saying to Barbadians, we have at the moment more than adequate capacity to treat to these cases. We have structures that have not yet been utilized, and we have from plan A to plan Z in terms of obtaining